Hey, what's going on, Dutch Nation? Today on the podcast, we have our Director of Research and Development, Lindsay Uribe. So Lindsay started her Dutch journey as a barista at the Merlin stand here in GP, ventured out to HQ, and actually became Travis Boersma's assistant for a brief period of time, went back to school, came back to DB to find herself in the ops department, where she currently resides today. Super cool conversation, talked a lot about our efforts in trying to be a more sustainable company, as well as the origin of cold brew, how long of a testing period that was, and how it came to be, in my opinion, the best drink we have, and pretty much any other coffee company for that matter. So sit back, relax, have a cup of cold brew, and enjoy the Lindsay Uribe podcast. Lindsay Uribe.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good.
I guess, what is your official title these days?
The Director of Research and Development.
Yes. You're still under the umbrella of operations, but it's the R&D tag.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
cool. I want to make sure that that gets mentioned.
Ops team, yeah.
Nice. How are you doing, Shane?
Oh, hey, Mark. I'm good, dude.
Nice.
I'm just kicking it. Yeah. What's up, Lindsay? How are you?
Good. Nice to see you.
Hey, nice to see you, too. I'm glad you came out.
It is really quiet out here. It's nice.
Yeah, it's nice and peaceful.
It's an ideal recording environment.
Exactly.
So we're thankful.
Yeah, right? Almost by design.
Yeah.
Lindsay, how long have you worked for DB?
It's been, all told, 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you started out doing what?
I started out as a barista out in Merlin.
Yay!
Hey.
Just riding down the street, folks.
Right down the road.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first drink of choice?
So my favorite drink was, I don't know if you guys remember, but we used to have gaki yerba mate.
Uh-huh.
And the two mint, two orange mate latte was my jam.
Wow.
I probably shouldn't even say this. It might be a new secret drink, but don't tell the ops team.
Yeah, that's on you guys.
Yeah. Oh, no. I always do a large, do like half of the cup full of hot water, steep tea bags. And then while those steep, you steam up some soy milk, get it nice and frothy.
Mm-hmm.
And then pour that in. On top of the froth, you do a little drizzle of honey.
That
is so good.
Mm.
Yeah, R.I.P. yerba mate.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
I know. So many people are going to be like, what is they talking about?
Totally. That was a while ago. But speaking of a while ago, after Merlin-ing it up in the stand for a while, you transitioned to be Travis Boersma's assistant for a period in time.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to tell us some stories about that and how it started at good
times.
How
does one become Trav's right-hand person?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because things have come like full circle. I saw an opening and it was for a note taker at all of the meetings. I'd been the medical records clerk for a while, had been a radiologist assistant. So I'd been like clerking and assistanting for a little bit.
Yeah.
I sat down for the interview, which was like the weirdest interview I've ever been in. Well, first off, it was just Brian and Christine, and they're like, yeah, Trav will be around somewhere. You'll get to meet him. And then like, I think it was about like 30, 45 minutes in, Trav like barges in and he's got like a pizza in one hand and a beer in the other. And he's like, oh, hey. Like, who are you? Yeah. So I got hired initially as like administrative assistant, note taker for all the meetings.
Yeah.
And I kind of like came in expecting that this would be like the sort of thing where you gotta wear like a blouse and like high heels and you gotta like be very official. It definitely wasn't like that.
No.
Super lax. I came to a meeting. I was ready to take notes. And Trav was like, hey, Linz, you want to run down to the store and go get some limes and some salt?
Mm.
And I was just so confused about how to do that. I was like, wait. I'm at work right now. I got to work at 8 o'clock and I leave at 4 o'clock. And I need to get in my car during work. Do I need to clock out? How do I pay for this?
Like, what are you talking about?
And he saw me, and I kind of was like sitting there staring at him. He's like, oh, and he like hands me like a wad of cash of like $200.
It's
like
a band.
Okay. What do limes go for? Like $50 a piece these days? Yeah, that sounds about right.
So that was like one of my first like introductory experiences of like how this goes.
And then eventually it just kind of graduated to Trav just sort of stole you and was like, I need somebody to help me out with a lot of the day-to-days as well as take notes like at our meetings and stuff. That was when I first met you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also Trip Androy, he went off and went to school. He went to Harvard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of was Trav's assistant handling like his financial stuff, properties, licenses for vehicles and whatnot. So Trip kind of like handed over that stuff when he left, and I did the notes for meetings and Trav's personal stuff, emails, phone calls, whatnots.
Yeah.
And then it's funny now because Trip is back.
Yeah. And he finally learned how to put shoes on.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to walk around the office barefoot. So now Trip also works in the operations team.
Right.
With me. It's kind of funny.
They all come back.
Yep.
And that's a good segue. During this time, you decided to go move to Georgia.
I did. So after a year doing personal assistant and note-taking and flying around to all the crazy meetings.
Buying limes and salt.
I decided to go back to school. So I moved to Georgia. Mm. I did some chimney sweeping and some schooling.
Chimney sweeping?
Yeah. Oh,
the whole like old timey, like you get up on the roof of the giant like feather duster and just.
Yeah, basically.
No. Oh, no.
So we lived north of Atlanta is where all the older, richer people, they live. And they
Hot
have,
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Oh, Hot Atlanta.
Marietta.
Their vacation homes. And yeah.
That's a good Georgian accent.
Though. Oh, thanks. I got some practice. They have multi-story homes, and they live there for like 3 or 4 months out of the year, and they got to get their chimney swept. So it was a good... It was a good side hustle. It was like, seriously, people pay on average $169 for a single fireplace. Mm. And if it was a wood stove, it was like $230 because those are...
Harder to clean.
Yeah, I hate wood stoves. Yeah. I love them for myself, but I don't ever want to clean a wood stove. So you get this big ass long feather duster, basically. They're like made out of fiberglass, and you screw them together so they can be like, you know, 100 feet long.
Sure.
And, yeah.
Gators down there. You got a gator
alligators
in your chimney.
In the chimneys.
Did you end up finishing school or?
I only completed my associates.
What made you choose Georgia?
Well, I'd grown up there.
Oh, okay.
So I moved to Oregon when I was 13, 14.
Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moving back to Georgia, I realized how awesome the West Coast is.
Yeah.
I like, there's some great spots in Georgia too, like don't get me wrong. It's just mountains here are bigger and snowier and less humid. Yeah. There are less poisonous, stingy things here, which is really nice. Less wasps.
Them water moccasins.
They do.
Yeah, cottonmouths, man. They can put you in the hospital.
And rattlesnakes and coral snakes.
So when did you move back to Oregon?
So I moved back to Oregon in fall of 2010. I called my friend Kendra. And she was working here and talked to Brian. And Brian was like, basically, give me a few choices. Mm-hmm. Could either work in the operations department or I could work in Dutchware.
Yeah.
Or up in legal. I think Josh Lute needed an assistant or needed some help. I've read a few contracts and like basically... always question my reality after reading them. So, I felt like operations was kind of the best spot.
So you chose ops.
I did, yeah.
And is that just due to your natural inquisitive temperament in wanting to know how things work?
I think within the ops team, ops really like handles so much. And it's such a kind of a general term for what they do, what we do.
Sure.
I think the thing that really appealed to me in ops was testing.
Yeah.
And new product development and new product design. This is mine. I love it. I'm going to do this. And so I started really kind of taking over like the new products and like testing out of things. I do a lot of taste testing.
Mm-hmm.
I bring around trays of tasty treats and wreck everybody's diets.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Poor Lindsay, depending on like the time of the year and the time of my life, sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, let me take yes. that. Sometimes it's like, devil woman, get away from me with that tempting, delicious thing. I'm trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
You always take it with grace, though.
Yeah. Well, I try. I know who's lactose intolerant. I know who's gluten-free.
Sure, yeah.
I feel like I know who's ketoing and who's not. Yeah. And yeah.
That's another thing. I see it all the time because I'm in social, how like literally everybody has an opinion. So they're like, I think you guys need to do this or this. Like, how many of like those suggestions do you actually like dive
take
in
and run with?
Yeah.
Oof, it depends. You know, a huge part of the filters that can like kill something, it can be a great idea, but if it takes up time at the window or is operationally complex, it's got to be easy and it's got to be fast and it's got to be fun too.
Yeah.
If it sucks to prepare something like, for example, our own custom whipped cream. Oh my God, we've looked at that so many times and it's always just like,
it's hard.
It's cool, but it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks to clean up those canisters.
Sure.
It sucks to like keep track of those little roly poly like nitrous chargers.
Yeah. I have to say, along the lines of taste testing and stuff, you were kind enough to include me in the taste testing of developing our cold brew, which is the greatest Dutch bro drink of all time on record.
Oh, I'm glad you think so.
So God bless you for getting the ball rolling. Talk to us about that, because that was a long process. You guys tried so many different formulas, so many different techniques. You were talking about taps at one point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We circled the world and back when it came to cold brew. Papa Roast, Jared, he started making cold brew here. It was actually Jared that we should all thank and like remember happily.
The former master roaster.
Yeah. So he was making batches of cold brew. Cold brew was like this thing that we were all reading about. And we're like, what is this? What is cold brew? How do you do it?
You mean like ice?
Yeah. So like, I mean, there were all these rumors going around like, it has like so much more caffeine and I don't know, it was just so interesting.
Yeah.
If you like coffee, and if you're like most of us, you start out with a super sweet honey drizzled drink.
Sure.
And then you eventually become like a dub shot drinker or a black Americano drinker. And that's all that you subsist off of. Cold brew is like that, but so mellow. And it has, you know, all the bitter notes are out. And it does have more caffeine.
Yeah.
Also very appealing.
I really love that about it. That's one of my favorite things is I'll start my day with a cold brew and I feel like I'm good for the day.
Yeah.
Like
I
very rarely have a second coffee.
Same here.
Yeah.
I mean, like a lot of us, because we started in the stands. So I mean, like you build your caffeine tolerance, but then like, shoot, like none of this is working anymore.
Yeah.
Cold brew, man. That gets you going.
Yeah. I know. The other day I had two.
Whoa. I've done that before. It's an interesting day.
Yeah. I didn't sleep that night.
My nose started to bleed.
Yeah.
At what point did you guys land on the nitro infused is just what makes it so smooth and amazing and like figuring out like the canning process and all that? Like, how did it finally get to like, okay, this is the direction we're going?
A lot of reading, a lot of kegging and brewing and grinding and filtering and overnight nitrogenating and shaking kegs and rolling them out and hooking them up and trying this and that
and batch after batch.
Yeah.
Cold brew.
Getting like shuddery and sweaty, going like, yeah, that's the good stuff. That's a good recipe. And eventually, I think once we tried it on nitro, that was it.
Yeah.
It's
like, no going back.
So much better on nitro. We did try a carbonated version and it was nasty. It wasn't good. You know, you got to try it. I think we got to a place where we felt like we had perfection in a cup.
Yeah.
And then like, once you figure out how to do it here on our own little small scale, we were kind of like, okay, so how the heck do we get this to, you know, at the time, 200 stores?
Yeah.
And how do we get it into the stores where it's easy and it's fast and it doesn't suck to prepare it?
Yes.
There have been a couple people that have been like arm in arm with us all along the way. Yeah. Caleb Berkey and Josh Hayes over in Arizona, they were super passionate about it. And, you know, we went down to Arizona. We looked at how to like grind and brew our own for the shops. Josh over at Greyhawk, they actually ground and brewed their own cold brew in the shop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they did that for a while.
What, they do it like on the roof? How do you like find the space? The back,
yeah, they got a big store. And in the meantime, we were also plowing ahead here at HQ with figuring out, okay, still it's got to be fast. It's got to be easy. We got to have something for these tiny, tiny footprint stores where, I mean, you've been to downtown. You've been to Merlin.
Of course, yeah.
You can like boot scoot around, but there's not a whole lot of dance floor.
No.
So the can, it was either going to be a concentrate or a can.
Yeah.
And we decided, you know, like concentrate, is that real cold brew? And what is true cold brew too? Yeah. That had not yet been defined. We landed on the can, went through some trial and error. At first we thought that the widget was the only way to go.
Like in a Guinness can.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
It turned out you don't need the widget at all. We talked some people into doing this for us, but we got them to get, you know, a canning line and drop a little drop of liquid nitrogen into the can as it's being filled with cold brew. Wow. And the people who make our cold brew are amazing. Yeah. They're like absolutely phenomenal. I love them. But basically, you get enough liquid nitrogen in there and you seal it right away. And that creates a little bit of pressure as the liquid nitrogen, which is super cold, it warms up, reaches the same temperature as the liquid that's going in there, and it creates some pressure inside the can. And it is under so much pressure contained in that can that it infuses with the coffee.
Uh-huh.
That's how you get that little velvety, those micro bubbles inside of the can. And that's why agitating it just a little bit, you rotate the can.
Rotate to activate, people.
Rotate to activate.
Don't shake it, just rotate.
Right, just enough. And that's what helps and makes it so velvety smooth and amazing.
I want to drink another one now.
Brant and I were just in New York. He spoke at this conference and they had all these different business owners and people. And one of them started their own cold brew company. He went to some expo on the West Coast and him and his best friend were like on I-5 and they saw a DB stand and like, we got to try it.
Yeah.
And so they like tried a bunch of our like product, but the one was cold brew. And they said like, out of all the different cold brews that they've like tried, ours was number one.
Boom.
He's like, you guys, the can is rad. The taste was amazing. And
that warms my heart.
So props to you guys.
Yeah. Oh,
thanks. I like to try not to be biased in everything that I do, but.
But go ahead.
I do like a cold brew.
Stand up, take a bow.
Well, I definitely wanted to talk about, you are part of a group of people that are very passionate about trying to make DB a more sustainable company. And I know that's something that's on a lot of our hearts as employees and fans of the brand. And clearly it comes with challenges. So, I mean, why is that such a passion of yours? And where do you think we can improve in that space or like efforts that we're making to try to get there?
That is something that is so important to me. I'm sure everybody who gets to like go outside and enjoys like backpacking or hiking or running or snowboarding. Yeah. I mean, I know you're a wild snowboarder too.
Guilty.
And yeah, I mean, I love being outside.
Sure.
You know, every once in a while I'll go out and be out in the woods and I see plastic everywhere.
Yeah.
We are a drive-through business and the vessel for us for spreading our love and getting the experiences out there, it comes in a cup.
Yeah.
And so our committee, we're just trying to learn as much as we can and trying to find product solutions and alternative materials, but also trying to educate. One of the biggest things that I have learned recently is there's just no perfect solution out there.
Yeah.
When I first started getting into all this, I was like, oh my God, we need to look at compostable cups. We need to look at compostables.
We gotta save the planet.
Yeah, and I really thought that was going to be, you know, something that we could do. And it's just so tough and it's a hard pill to swallow, but compostables are in some ways good, in some ways great, but in some ways worse.
Yeah.
And it's tough because what I realized is like compostables aren't the answer.
Yeah.
Biodegradables aren't the answer. Recycling could be an answer. But all of the systems, the infrastructure in place in North America is what's missing.
Yeah.
So in order for a compostable product to truly be the end of life good solution for a disposable cup, it needs to be collected and taken to a commercial composting facility.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's missing is the sorting capacity for a hauler. Either it needs to happen in the stand or in the place of business where there's a closed loop where this product goes out, it gets used, it gets returned to the same place.
Yeah.
Or a different place where it can be sorted there. Mm-hmm. And there's no national standard for markings for a compostable cup. So what happens is these waste haulers who come and pick up trash, curbside or commercial trash, they can't tell the difference between a compostable cup and a non-compostable cup.
Oh, yeah, okay. So it just ends up in a landfill anyway.
So it all goes to a landfill.
Yeah.
If it goes to a landfill, sadly, which we know is what's going to happen with the majority of our cups, is it will basically decompose and it becomes like a food waste. Now, food waste in a landfill, if you don't know, it produces what's called methane, methane gas, which is a greenhouse gas. And it is, I've heard estimates of 25 times more potent than CO2. CO2 is the number one greenhouse gas that that is talked about now.
Yeah.
But methane gas is so much more potent. And when you're looking at a solution, you want it to be 100% a solution.
Yeah.
And knowing that by choosing this compostable cup, we're actually potentially doing more harm, far more harm than we would intend to do, but potentially more harm than we would be doing if we just chose a regular plastic cup.
Yeah, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Yeah.
We got some of these compostable cups and they melt at 105 degrees.
Ooh, which so also, no Americanos, folks. Sorry. Yeah. Or really you, like anything.
If you stack your cups ice on top of the machine, which is what we always used to do,
that'll melt them.
It melts. It's about 106 degrees right on top of that espresso machine.
So nice, though, when your hands are cold.
We've been looking at every single possible type of straw. I've been subjecting people to paper straws here at the office.
Sure.
And it's tough because paper straws are like, they feel natural, but also it's the same thing. You can't really recycle them.
Yep. Right.
Your hauler's not going to accept a paper straw. Maybe some will. If you if they do, that's amazing. Here in Grants Pass, they definitely don't. But if it goes into a landfill again, it's going to be methane. I have also learned about in the recent years, carbon footprints. Yeah. So the amount of energy that it takes to produce a product, that's something that you have to evaluate when you're looking at things from a sustainability perspective, is like, what's the carbon footprint of this material over this material?
Sure. Because maybe if it's not as recyclable or it's not biodegradable, but the actual manufacturing of it does very little harm to like the environment, then I don't know, is that the better option?
Well, so ideally you would have something that has a low carbon footprint and has a good end of life scenario. And I think the thing that I've learned right now is that the hunt will go on, but at this time, there is not a good enough solution yet.
Right.
There are some things that I'm really, really excited about that I wouldn't want to bore you guys too much with the details, but it's basically like, there's some technologies out there that they're in development, they're not scalable yet. So meaning we can't get enough resin supply to make the amount of product that we would need at an economic scale. But there are some things, some materials. If anybody who's listening is interested, you can Google it. There's this material called air carbon. They basically take carbon out of the atmosphere, just like a tree does, and renders that into a 3D carbon structure. Super cool. Also can withstand espresso temperatures, which is really important. So we're keeping an eye on things like that. And we're constantly searching and Googling and looking for things and reaching out to vendors. A large part of what we do in the sustainability committee is we ask our vendors to be the masters. You know, we're not chemical engineers and we're not bioengineers, as much as I would love to be. We ask them to be the masters of that and to let us know what's in development and what we can be aware of and look for.
Well, I'm glad you're fighting that fight because I think a lot of us feel like it's a very important thing to try to come up with solutions.
Sometimes it feels like we're like tackling world problems.
Right.
Like, yeah, we're going to solve the the world pollution crisis. But we definitely are doing what we can. And I think the other thing that I have realized and that we've landed on is that it comes down to behavior change.
Yeah.
And encouraging our customers to bring in reusable mugs.
Yeah.
A reusable is always, always, always better than a disposable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, essentially, no matter what, if somebody can remember to bring in their own mug,
yeah,
or remember to bring in their own bag for the grocery store, that's better than this plastic that is going out and it gets used once and it gets thrown away.
Yeah, totally. Also, I mean, it's a small thing, but for some people, it's a huge thing. The fact that we incentivize them with a 25-cent discount, you know, that's the thing you could always like push on someone and be like, well, you know, if you keep bringing in your mug, you save a quarter on your drink. It adds up if you come in every day.
Yeah, right. You bring that in, you know, a good amount of times and you've got yourself a few free drinks. And
totally.
Let me just hide my small ice Americano.
Yeah, it's okay.
Sorry. I feel so bad now.
Dude, well, I mean, like, none of us are perfect.
Right.
Like, I still drive a car to get to work every day.
Sure.
And like, someday I'll be able to afford a Tesla, but.
Right, yeah. So with R&D and, you know, ops in general, any sneak peeks coming up you can divulge, or are they too top secret?
Oh, I like always want to talk about all of the things, but
can't wait.
Also, it's like a double-edged sword. As soon as I talk about them, people are like, so when is it going to be here?
Right. Like, that's when you discover potential problems, like, logistical challenges. Yeah. It's like, oh, we actually can't do this now.
Yeah. Also, to like give background, it took us, I think, 2 years to figure out cold brew.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we try to do a good job, but it takes a long time.
Things take time. Yeah. Yes. Trust the process.
The things that I'm most excited about that we're working on are things to reduce packaging waste and increase efficiencies. And looking at things on tap.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I'll leave you with that.
And again, ladies and gentlemen, this does not mean that these things are going to happen.
We're getting into the
We are making the efforts to try to get that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I mean, like we have already talked about ad nauseum, the cold brew is amazing and the can. But if I could get it on tap, damn.
Yeah. Right? It's just on demand. I mean,
it's the good good.
Good.
Well, I think we've taken up a lot of your time. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
It went by so fast.
Yeah. So I'll kick it over to Mr. Shane Tappan.
Yeah. So Lindsay, if you could give one piece of advice to our audience, what would it be?
I would say take the initiative.
Yeah.
There's this little saying somebody else said to me one time. If it is to be, it is up to me. If you want something, you need to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go after it, and nobody else is going to do it for you. I don't know how many little things that you've swirled around on or thought about or wanted, but if you want it, you got to work for it and you got to get it.
Yeah.
And somebody one night like said something to me that really stuck with me. Always try to be interested. Every single person that you meet has their own battles that they are fighting and struggling for, and to them it's their world. And glossing over that or just like assuming, you know, something about somebody, like, you have no idea what they're in and what they're going through. Everybody is their own little microcosm, and don't forget it.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice there, you know, just take interest, because sometimes people are pouring their heart out even if it seems like on a minute level.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, probably worked nights and you sit there and have like therapy sessions with people.
Totally.
The
stuff that people express to you sometimes was mind blowing.
Yeah.
Totally. Like, and sometimes you're like, I don't even know what to do.
How do I respond to that?
Yeah.
It's challenging for sure.
Yep.
But be interested, y'all, because it's going to mean a lot to that person.
Yeah. And you can learn a lot from people too.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of this company's success was based around. Trav and Dane always talked about, like, just studying basic human tendencies.
Right.
I'm seeing a pattern here. Maybe we should do a drive-through, you know, because people would come out, get their coffee, and just go right back into their car.
Right.
You know, those little things.
That is one thing of learning how it is that people operate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to propose something, it helps to make it easy for somebody to do.
All right. Well, Lindsay Uribe, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your perspective and your wisdom. And
thank you for cold brew.
Thank you for cold brew. My gosh.
Got to thank Trav for that.
That's true. That's true.
Trav and all of ops and everybody there. We love you.
Yeah. Everybody. Love y'all.
Later, Dutch Nation.
Bye-bye.